DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. Remember that as usual, we're live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And of course, we welcome our listeners from our partner stations across the continent.
Coming up, Nigeria Electoral Commission dismisses reports of ballot papers in circulation ahead of Saturday's general elections.
There are some insinuations of ballot papers, but those, most of the source stories are coming from the social media. But I want to assure Nigerians that the ballot paper in the custody of INEC are intact.
Divided opinion in Kenya after a government ban on skin lightening creams in the wake of damning reports about the negative side effects among users.
I don't support the banning of bleaching agents products because so many people are going to lose jobs.
Countries like Rwanda have done it, and it's about time our own country banned these products. This is a positive move.
Plus, another sex scandal hits the Catholic Church in India.
These stories are coming up shortly after the world news in brief.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. One of fashion's enduring icons, Karl Lagerfeld, has died. Lagerfeld was the creative director of the Chanel clothing brand since 1983, transforming it into a modern fashion powerhouse. He sported his signature powdered ponytail and dark sunglasses everywhere he went. He was 85 years old. A Tanzanian court sentenced a prominent Chinese businesswoman known as the Ivory Queen to 15 years in prison. Yang Fenglan was found guilty of leading an organized criminal gang. She, along with two Tanzanian men, smuggled 860 pieces of ivory worth $5.6 million between 2000 and 2004. She has denied the charges. U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders announced that he will run for president in 2020. Sanders previously ran in 2016 under the Democratic ticket, losing to eventual nominee Hillary Clinton in a tight race. In an interview on CBS's This Morning, Sanders outlined what would be different about his campaign.
We're going to win. We are going to also launch what I think is unprecedented in modern American history, and that is a grassroots movement, John, to lay the groundwork for transforming the economic and political life of this country. That's what's different.
This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. The Deutsche Welle Freedom of Speech Award has been presented to Anabel Hernandez for her work covering the drug wars in Mexico. The Mexican government wanted to kill her for her work exposing how high-ranking officials were caught up in the conflict, which forced her to leave Mexico. She appreciated the award and said the award should bring more attention to the drug wars in Mexico.
I am grateful for this Freedom Speech Award, because I think this is a kind of way to recognize of the international community that that this disaster humanitarian that exists in Mexico, it's not just responsibility of the Mexicans or the Mexican government or the Mexican cartels. This is also a huge responsibility of the international community.
A German newspaper has reported that Germany has not provided any drugs for the elderly for assisted suicide, despite a 2017 verdict that allowed it in exceptional cases. The Tagesspiegel reported that 93 of 123 applications for the drugs were rejected by the Federal Institute for Drugs and Medical Devices. None were approved, and 22 died while waiting for their application to be processed. The paper said Deputy Health Minister Jens Spahn played a pivotal role in the decisions, urging the institute to not allow anyone to purchase the drugs. And in sports, German Bundesliga leaders Borussia Dortmund drew with last place Nuremberg, leaving the league leaders with just a 3-point edge over 6-time defending champions Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich will take on Champions League runners-up Liverpool tonight to begin their Champions League round of 16 campaigns. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
And this is DW's Africa Link program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura, a warm welcome to all of you listening there on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Chelsea Priyan says he's watching from Cameroon. We have Nweke Joshua, who says he's watching from Abuja. And we have many more. Tell us what you think about the stories we are covering today.
That's right. Indeed, to start with, the Nigeria Electoral Commission has dismissed reports of ballot papers in circulation ahead of Saturday's general elections. The reassurance comes a day after President Muhammadu Buhari accused the electoral body of incompetence after the postponement of the polls.
However, Aliyu Bello, the commission's deputy publicity director, says they are ready to prove they can hold free and fair elections. Listen to what he told me shortly before we went on air.
The commission is well prepared and ready to conduct free, fair and credible elections on the 23rd of February to the office of President and the National Assembly elections. Already our ballot papers have been delivered to states and are in good custody of the state in the respective central bank offices, and they will be deployed to field on time without delay.
So have you sorted out the logistical problems which were there?
Of course. Nigerians and every voter that is eligible to vote should be rest assured that you will have opportunity to exercise your franchise, and the commission is ready, very ready, to conduct the election.
There are reports that there are ballot papers in circulation. Have you found out about this, or how true is it?
There are some insinuations of ballot papers, but those, most of the source stories are coming from the social media. But I want to assure Nigerians that the ballot paper in the custody of INEC are intact, none of which got missing. So the commission is taking good care of the ballot papers. So all of the stories about ballot papers and the rest of them that are out there are not actually part of commission's ballot paper. And therefore, even if there is such story and it's found to be confirmed, it is never part of INEC ballot papers and will not distract the elections.
President Buhari has accused the Electoral Commission of incompetence following the postponement of the elections. Do you think this was a failure on your part?
It was obviously an unexpected situation the commission found itself. And the commission expressed deep regrets over what happened and is strategizing to conduct the elections on the 23rd.
The Nigeria Electoral Commission had banned campaigns until Saturday when the elections will be held. So, Bello, tell us, why the change of plans from the Electoral Commission?
After due consultations with stakeholders and on account of numerous complaints about it, the commission see it necessary to continue to lift the ban and allow parties to campaign until 24 hours to the next election.
So how free in this case can we say you are from political interference?
It wasn't an interference by a political party, and the law actually provides that there is still room for the campaigns to happen. It's not like the commission is influenced by decision of other of one or two individual stakeholders, but by collective interest of the law, collective interest of stakeholders in the process.
That is Aliyu Bello, Deputy Publicity Director at the Nigerian Electoral Commission.
And if you'd like to know more about the upcoming elections in Nigeria, and of course, more information on Nigeria itself, the elections, the candidates, just go to our webpage, dw.com/Africa. There are many articles there and videos for you to get more and learn more about the election itself.
Moving on to other stories making headlines, sexual abuse by the clergy and failure of Vatican officials to take action has marred the Catholic Church across the world. In India, nuns are publicly protesting an incident in which a nun was allegedly raped by a bishop. He was later freed on bail. Rajana Kumar is a women's rights activist in India. She tells us the impact this case has had in her country.
I think it's a deep impact. Same way, first time ever, someone from inside the church, a nun, comes out. The kind of onslaught of the bishops on them by, you know, trying to prevent them first, then secondly, when they came out on the protest, because of the larger support that they got from the society, that they managed to stand the ground and they managed to fight back. This whole idea of celibacy and trying to see that all these people are living by the rules of the church is not true. Women are sexually getting exploited and harassed. And as one of the the nun said that because of Me Too movement, you know, it is very strong now. Women are realizing that they are not supposed to be becoming some kind of a sexual slaves.
Now, the nun in question, whose identity has been left out for protection purposes, said she did not get any support from the church. But with too much public attention, the question is, what happens next? Here is Kumari, the activist, again.
Now the ball is in the court of the police. They will go for investigation. There is a charge of sexual assault, and this is a very, very serious offense. After Nirbhaya case, you know, we changed the law. Any kind of sexual assault will be, you know, considered under the law. And once the investigation is complete and case is filed, I'm sure he is going to be punished for sexually assaulting the nun. And they tried to bully them, but it was not working because there is so much of support from outside, and people like us are standing with the nuns to support them.
Women's rights activist in India, Ranjana Kumari.
We now head to Kenya, and of course you're talking about another topic, skin bleaching, which has become a common practice across Africa. Users of skin bleaching products spend a fortune on injections and skin lightening creams.
In Kenya, the National Bureau of Standards has banned skin lightening products to protect consumers and discourage the dumping of bleaching creams. The regulatory body has listed dozens of creams, gels, and liquid products which, when used unregulated, have serious health effects. Andrew Asike with that report.
I walk down the busy river road in Nairobi, and one can spot the skin lightening creams on display in the shops. Illicit beauticians sit outside their shops, hissing at passing women to attract customers. They have been cashing in on this demand for skin bleaching creams. They see the ban on skin lightening creams as a threat to their businesses.
So many people are going to lose jobs because it has been a booming business for so many ladies who are in the beauty product.
The state is now policing personal decisions that people make. The government should work on regulating the industry and not banning the skin bleaching agents.
The Kenya Bureau of Standards says most of the skin lightening creams contain toxic components like hydroquinone, mercury, and some hormones which pose a health risk. For some, it was a decision long overdue.
They are carcinogenic and can cause cancer or even skin problems in the long run. Countries like Rwanda have done it, and it's about time our own country banned these products. This is a positive move by the government, and I fully support it.
Oh, I thank God they have done that. It does not affect me in any way, does it? No, in fact, I support whoever banned them fully, 100%. They should go for it.
Advertisements on billboards in Kenya promoting the trend showcasing models with light skin alongside the creams. Celebrities such as the famous actress and musician Vera Sidika are accused of pushing forth this agenda by openly bleaching their skin.
Andrew Wasike with that report. And on that note, we're wondering whether to bleach or not to bleach. That's why we asked a question asking, why are more people bleaching their skin, and would you bleach your skin?
And Mweni Jacqueline here says, I'm Kenyan and the madness is simply too much. I will not bleach my skin at any cost. If you don't like it, move on.
And Auntie Riley says, it's left on society to appreciate the African black beauty because it never cracks.
And I like this one from Fung Elvis, who says, African countries should strongly condemn bleaching in all forms. It's not healthy and it's also a crime before God.
For Kaklo Gambino Zippy, he thinks that bleaching of skin is partly a mental disorder, mm-hmm. and an indication of low self-esteem. This is a story that we've been covering. I think because some people don't appreciate their beauty, they think by changing it later, it makes them more beautiful.
And they say the men, in fact, are going for these yellow, as they call them in Kenya. That is also the other problem.
Unfortunately, you are generalizing. Not all men, you know. Not all men like it that way. Because, you know, some of the comments here, like one from Wambi, who says, it is quietly costly. The late Fela Kuti was a Nigerian musician. He warned our ladies with his Yellow Fever song in 1971, I don't know how old you are by then, Zippy, about the cost of bleaching, but they have not heeded to the warning. That is my comment. He says, the girls and women have burnt their skins and exposed themselves to cancer. Well said, Wambi. Now, for more to this story and others, just go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and leave your comment there. Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
With me, Zipporah Nyambura. And first, let me acknowledge some of your names listening to us there. Bell Epignosis says, yes, black is beautiful. And you have many more. Johansson Giba says, DW Africa. He's telling us we should cover about Adama Barrow. And we have many more. Thank you for keeping it, Africa Link.
And another comment that is coming up on skin bleaching, to bleach or not to bleach. Olinga Bell says, keep bleaching, but don't blame others when you get skin cancer. And coming up in the next part of the show, we will be hearing a painter in the Gambia who's trying to change the perception in his country that painting is only for the lazy.
Political impasse painting is an opportunity for every Gambian to reflect on what is bigger than any one individual Gambian.
Wow, that sounds inspirational. Make sure you stay here and listen to that story.
Exactly. It's been 100 years since the first ever Pan-African Conference was held in Paris to demand freedom for Africa's colonies and a greater voice for Africans worldwide. African delegates convened in France's capital Paris to map up ways through which they would decide their destiny and push for political emancipation.
The idea for the conference was brought up by William Edward Du Bois, an American civil rights activist and Pan-Africanist. This report by Daniel Peltz is now presented by Assumpta Latus.
At the end of the First World War and defeat of Germany, the world was changing fast and becoming increasingly unstable. A peace treaty was to be negotiated in France, and it is for that reason that William Edward Bukat Du Bois, an American Pan-Africanist, had an ambitious plan that caused even his longtime supporters to shake their heads. Black people from Africa, the US, and other regions from around the world would gather in the center of Paris to make demands and present them to the peace negotiators meeting in the French capital. Mamadou Diouf, a professor of African studies at the Columbia University in New York, told DW why Paris was the right venue for Africans to make their demands known to the world.
The Congress was held in Paris for a simple reason. The Congress was convened within the context of the Versailles Peace Conference. The ideas behind this very, very important push by black leaders was that Africa should be present during the discussion, and the African issues need to be presented by black people, and that presence will contribute actually to, if you want, an African presence in the post-World War I.
After the war, it was immediately clear that Germany's colonial empire in Africa would soon come to an end. Andreas Eckert from the German University of Humboldt explains what motivated Du Bois to push for Africa's total independence.
Du Bois was convinced relatively early that the European and North American politicians would not grant the colonies independence. But at least he tried to take advantage of this situation and say, we need to negotiate concrete improvements for the societies that work and live in these colonies.
In Washington, he tried to secure access to the U.S. delegation in France, but was rebuffed by the State Department. In the end, 57 supporters met in Paris, 16 of them from the U.S. But making it happen was hard, as explained by Mamadou Diouf.
This is an important element to take into account, because what is happening at that moment is African and people of African descent beginning to create, actually, if you want, a global movement. And that global movement didn't have directly an impact on the negotiation, but it began to create a very important movement which will play a critical role in this interwar period.
After 3 days of talks, the Congress presented several clear demands, including the gradual self-administration of the African colonies, freedom of expression, the right to own land, and above all, an education.
Assumpta Lattus presented that report by Daniel Pels. And decades after the end of colonialism, would you say that your country gained complete liberty? Is the question that we put forward to you on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And I like the comments here, Isaac. Izu Antonio says, African countries are still trapped in the slave cage of their colonial masters. Before colonialism, he says, every tribal ethnic group in Africa was a nation on its own.
Kebi Valerie says, how could we have gained complete liberty when our monetary and economic policies are crafted by the former colonial masters? He is talking about the CFA franc, you know, how France controls, you know, currencies of 16 countries like Cameroon and Togo and Benin, etc.
I think everyone is skeptical. Ewano Bazilion says it was a mere paperwork. Colonialism has stepped up geometrically. France wants to erase Central African states.
Comson Evans Kofi says, absolutely big no. African countries are not free from their colonial masters, except the late Colonel Gaddafi, who was independent from the West. And yeah, we appreciate these comments. We'll come back to them whenever we can. We still have much more for you just right after this.
Africa on the move.
Now, painting as a profession is not so popular in the Gambia, especially among the youth. Many consider it for the lazy, and only a handful of Gambians take painting as a career. Social activist Apajo Jallo has been painting for the last 10 years for a living.
Jallo has held several art exhibitions, among them the Calabash Homeland Series and the Forgotten Stones. DW's Omar Wali in Banjul attended one of his art exhibitions in Serekunda and filed this report.
Alfajo Jallo, a self-taught painter, crafted his art for painting at the age of 16. Now 26, his recent art exhibition that stands out is The Political Impasse. It depicts the political standoff following ex-president Yahya Jammeh's election defeat and refusal to step down. The painting features the role played by the ECOWAS military intervention which forced Jammeh out of office. Alfajo explains the importance of the painting.
Political impasse painting is an opportunity for every Gambian to reflect on what is bigger than any one individual Gambian. So really, it talks about the identity of Gambia. But if you take it further into what I've done here, which is the impasse also, is to remind everyone that our individual human greed, our political ambition, cannot overshadow Gambia.
His painting also depicts the role of the social media platforms in the Gambia, like Facebook and Twitter, and how they contributed in bringing down the dictatorship of Yahya Jammeh.
Social media aspect of the painting is very crucial. It was used also to sort of control the population, right? That's what dictatorship does, right? They control information. And I think during the impasse, what was very instrumental was the way we used the media, even though it was shut down. VPN and all that. It was a way to reconstrain. And so I find it interesting, and so I used it here.
The award-winning artists continue to use art to celebrate Africa's story in a manner that shows the beauty in it. Mamadou Sabali is an art lover and has been following Jallo's artwork for many years.
I'd call him the artist of our time because his paintings are actually capturing in real time the historic moments in our lives, in our life as a nation, from the stone circles to the events that mark the historic political impasse. And I was particularly touched by a painting he did of the, I think it's the Grenfell Towers in England, that was burned down recently, and it actually led to the death of a Gambian who was a highly respected artist, but Gambians didn't know much about her until after that very unfortunate incident.
One of his paintings fetching $1,500 at the exhibition, and Alpha Amadou Barry was one of the clients who bought few paintings.
I like the way he plays with the colors. So one of the things that attracted me to him is the colors that he uses. The painting I bought from him is a three-piece, but then you put it together. They're all made of calabash or gourds carrying water. He's known for the calabash. That's his signature.
That inspirational report was compiled by Omar Wali.
Focus Europe.
Focus on Europe this week. We will unusually talk about what people say when death occurs of a loved one. In Africa, after the funeral, mourners often converge at the home of the deceased to remember him or her, share food and drinks. And in other progressive countries, of course, also in Africa, they would like to converge at cafes rather than their homes.
Here in Germany, the way people deal with the idea of death is changing from something that's not really thought about, let alone spoken about, to a more open approach. There are a growing number of death cafes where people are happy discussing death. Tamsin Walker went along to one to find out what it's all about and sent this postcard from Berlin.
I've often referred to myself as having a morbid fascination with death. But the more I've seen people talk about it in hushed tones as if it was something sinful or shrink away from its name as though it were reserved for others, the more I think such curiosity is healthy. The idea of death cafes, then, holds a certain appeal. The first ever was held in London in 2011 and has since spawned something of a movement, spreading to 62 countries across the world. They're not actual cafes, but regular gatherings open to anyone who wants to come along and chat about death over coffee and cake. The monthly meeting of the Berlin branch is organised by Angela Fornes, an undertaker who's accompanied many people on that final journey and who appeals for the acceptance of our mortality in her book, Den Tod muss man leben, or Death Has to Be Lived. Born to German-American parents, she grew up in Mexico and attributes her ease around the inevitability that remains a taboo in German society to her time there. She describes how she and her friends, on hearing that another child had died, would stop playing and get on their bikes and go and pay tribute to the deceased, whose body would be laid out at home in a sea of flowers. Because that, she says, was just what was done. It's not, though, what's done here, and it may never come to that. But in a country where almost 1 million people died last year, there's definitely room for efforts to normalize the normal.
Death cafes are meant to be a space where you can talk about death and dying without being fearful of mentioning it. Here in Germany, if you start talking about it, people say, would you stop it? Or, I don't want to talk about it, I want to live. And that's exactly it. Why not bring it back into life? It's normal. That's it. And that's life.
The death cafe I went to was also a celebration. Mexican Day of the Dead style. On that basis, the funeral parlor room where it was held had been set up with an elaborate altar bursting with color and symbolic offerings, as well as flowers, pictures, and statues. Since the start of Germany's hospice movement 25 years ago, they too have become more common, providing a service which Angela Fornes likens to that of a midwife.
People who haven't gone through this process of accompanying somebody who's dying, they are fearful because they, of course, don't know what's happening. But once you've experienced it, you realize, wow, that's what life is actually all about. There's birth and death. Those two doors one has to go through. There's just no exception whatsoever.
Okay, that report was by Tamsin Walker. A little bit somber, but, you know, Zippy, in Africa, especially in parts of Ghana, death is celebrated. The longer depends on how prominent you are in society.
Yeah, and we know also in Kenya there are people who celebrate, but there are people who also mourn.
Exactly. And yeah, and also, it depends on your age. I mean, if you pass away at the age of above 70, people have the right to celebrate your death rather than mourn because you've lived your life well. And that age, surely, it's not something small.
But, you know, Isaac, what's the case if you laugh when someone just died? How will you celebrate?
Of course, it's not laughing, it's celebrating. Like, for example, we've done a story in Ghana where if you're a shoemaker, they make a coffin made out of a shoe. If you're a fisherman, it's out of fish. Tell us what you think by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, another story is of the Tanzanian court has sentenced Yang Fengla, a prominent Chinese businesswoman, dubbed the Ivory Queen, to 15 years in prison for smuggling tusks of elephants. There are some comments here. Aunt Reli says, absolutely, Magufuli is bold, while the rest of presidents are puppets of their colonial masters, China.
Putin Ngeno actually says the sentence is too lenient.
Kiki Joe says this can't happen in Ghana. The Chinese kingpin woman to Galamsey walked freely out of our courts. We appreciate your company throughout the show. And on behalf of the technical team in the background, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.